Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions regarding yourself and your well-being and your health and the health of your family and your community. So as always, I'd like to welcome you for joining me today, and we are having a wonderful conversation planned, and I'm sure that you'll be so pleased that you tuned in today, because we're talking about a topic that I think is an important topic to discuss. It's a topic that I also see facing so many people in so many ways, and we're going to be discussing grief. And my guest today is Karen Johnson, and she's an author of a fantastic new book that's come out called Living Grieving, Using Energy Medicine to Alchemize Grief and Loss. And that's the topic of our show today, Using Energy Medicine to Alchemize Grief and Loss. And if you're curious as to what that means, then stay tuned. And if you have been dealing with loss, if you had a loss of a loved one or a loss of a job, there is so much happening in the world with loss here in Australia, and we have just had historic flooding, and thousands and thousands and thousands of homes are now underwater or have been destroyed, and people are without their homes, without their livelihood, without their possessions. So it's a time of great loss I see happening in the world. And more than ever, we need time, and we need an understanding to process what loss is all about, and how to move through loss, how to move through grieving. And it's something our culture doesn't teach us a whole lot about. And that's why I am just so happy to have Karen with us today. Let me just give you a little bit about her background. Karen Johnson is a graduate of Georgetown Law Center and a former Fulbright Scholar in Afghanistan, and holds master's degrees in public health and public and international affairs. Karen is a retired federal administrative law judge who practiced criminal and energy law for more than 30 years. She is also a former U.S. Army officer major. And Karen was personally trained by Alberto Villoldo and is faculty at the 4-1 Society and a master practitioner of energy medicine. She has trained extensively in the techniques of illumination, soul retrieval, extractions of energies and entities, divination, and death rites. And she has an amazing story of her own personal transformation. And I think we'll just let Karen jump in and begin this journey of journeying through the deeper understanding of loss and grief, and also how to navigate this journey. How do we process the experience? How do we learn from it? How do we become transformed by it? So much to talk about, and it's so profound that we're having this conversation today. So first of all, let me welcome Karen Johnson to the show. So Karen, so happy you're here. Welcome to What Women Must Know.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on your show and talking about this really important subject that's up for so many people around the world, losses of so many kinds, including death and divorce and loss of businesses and losses of homes and so much loss around the world. So this is a beautiful time to really begin to look at this subject of grief and loss and how it might be handled a little bit better and how we might make a transformational kind of journey with our grief and loss.
It's so interesting because, our culture doesn't teach us a whole lot about what really goes on in reality and who we really are. We kind of get programmed, don't we, into a system that, you know, I mean, look at you. You know, you were, you know, you had amazing determination and, potential to, you know, become a lawyer, two master's degrees. I mean, you were, you know, embedded in a culture of achievement, and you did it.
Yes.
And, you know, and reading your book, which, by the way, is fantastic, and I recommend it to everyone, you were, you know, you struggled to get into a place of the success that you've had in your career, and then got caught in the system, right? You, and that was
yes.
reality for you.
For sure.
So I'm not going to say any more, because I want you to share the story of how this journey of going from this judge, being a judge, being
right.
a tenured
right.
judge for life, being in this world, and suddenly...
Yeah.
You transformed, and it was through grief, and how it grief became a teacher for you and a vehicle of, I would say, truly embracing your soul's purpose in life, which is such a blessing. So I'm just going to let you jump in and start where you'd
okay.
like to start.
Sure. Yeah, I love that. So it's sort of that backdrop of success that I bought into, and I call it in my book Success at Any Price. And I think, and sometimes we collude with the consensual reality. So that seems like such a heavy word, like consensual reality, but it's that pressure that society and culture and family puts on us to perform and to succeed and all those things that are wonderful, but at any price. And the price often is our soul. And colluding with the consensual, I thought, collude is such a heavy word. Because by definition, it includes the concept of willfully cooperating secretly or unlawfully to deceive. And I thought, wow, so I don't know about secretly, but I suppose not. We don't rail against it. We just kind of go along. We acquiesce to the expectations floating all around us. And who are we deceiving? Probably ourselves most of all, every day as we make choices that keep us locked in and blindly running on the hamster wheel that we create. And so that was pretty much me. I was pretty much locked in, running on the hamster wheel of success, driving in the second worst traffic in the United States for 30 years. I mean, 30 years. You have to really be kind of a little bit completely plugged in without thinking, thoughtlessly plugged in to do that. It's horrible. It's just absolutely horrible. And so here I am going along, knowing that I just wasn't sure what would happen to me after. So many of the judges that I know, we call it dying with your boots on. So they'd be 90 years old and kind of still toddling into work, right? And I thought, well, and some of them retired and then begged to come back. They didn't know what to do with their lives. They were miserable. All they know is work. And I thought, well, I guess that's it. I guess this is what you create and this is what you live and there's nothing else. And then I had this big awakening. And it's not the kind of awakening that any mother wants. It's the death of my 27-year-old son from a heroin overdose. And for me, it was completely unexpected. He wasn't an addict. He went to a party with friends. They got drunk. They decided they were going to try heroin. He was a really big guy, 6'8", and maybe 280 pounds. And so they just gave him a lot, and he died almost instantly. And he and I were super close. And he had been struggling and been struggling with businesses and going back to college and all sorts of things. But I really just did not see it coming at all. And in fact, when it happened, I was on vacation in South Korea, which is about a 14-and-a-half-hour plane ride, let alone, you know, the time zones are reversed. So here I am in Korea, and that afternoon I really didn't feel well. I really felt ill, and then I got a call, and someone hung up. And I just knew it was bad news. I just knew it. So I called this number back, and it was a detective. And I said, "What's going on?" They said, "Well, it's your son, Ben." I said, "What, was he in an accident? What happened?" And he said, "No, he's dead." And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I mean, it just fell apart. There was when my world really, really just completely fell apart. And it was so hard to get there. It was nighttime when I got the news, and then I couldn't get a flight till the next morning, and then the flight took 14 hours. And so you can imagine, by the time I got home a day later, I was a wreck. And in the airport in South Korea waiting for my flight, I saw Ben. Ben came to me just like he was in life, with his big old smile, and he just stood there for a moment, and then he faded away. So I frantically called his father, and I said, "You got to call the ME, and you got to have them look in the drawer. I think he's trying to get out. I think he's alive. I think he's alive." And I made such a big hysterical stink that they actually called the ME. The ME actually looked and said, "I'm sorry, you know, he's gone." And that was sort of my very first introduction into life after death, which I'm not really sure I really believed in before then. If somebody had asked me before then, I would have said, "Alive is alive, dead is dead. That's it." I just didn't have a spiritual background to fall into. And so this was a big thing for me and a big awakening. And then it was a process over the days and years, actually a year and a half about, of me becoming more and more in touch with spirits on the other side, including my son, Ben. And I had another experience where I could feel him as I was in extreme grief. I couldn't even make it up to my bedroom. I'd be lying on the floor screaming and then screaming until I threw up and throwing up until I threw up blood. And I could feel Ben frantically around me. I could feel him just like wings beating just all around me, just frantic. And so I did something very unexpected in my left brain lawyer world. I looked up a medium. I wanted to find a medium, and I had no idea that were mediums even living around me. And it turns out, yes, in Fairfax County, Virginia, which is the highest educated county per capita in the United States, there are indeed spiritual folks that I just never had known about. And so I looked in the phone book, and one woman's picture seemed to be larger than the other one. And so I thought, well, I'll go with that one. That seems good. And I went to her place, and I said, "Look, he's standing right there. See, he's messing with the candle over there. He's making it flicker so you can see him. And I can see him, but I can't hear what he's saying. Can you tell me what he's saying?" And ended up having a wonderful medium session. And at the end, she said to me, "You know, you might have some skills yourself. Most of my clients have no idea that their loved one is right there or whether, you know, can see them or anything like that." And so that led me on a spiritual quest, really, to talk more with my son. I wanted to find out so that I could hear him. I was clairsentient, clairvoyant, but I was not clairaudient at that time. So I really wanted to develop all my skills, mostly to get in touch with Ben. And then over time, it just became more and more of an interest of mine, the Kabbalah, crystals, everything. I just wanted to learn about everything. I was just hungry for this knowledge, and yet trying to be a judge at the same time, knowing that this too was going to be a limited duration, because if the Washington Post found out, oh, hey, this judge is also pursuing all these things in shamanic medicine, which was the direction I ended up taking, that wouldn't have been seen very in a very positive light. That would have been pretty bad.
Not a very stable person, right?
No, not very stable. And I knew too, I did not want to see a traditional therapist, because I felt that they would try to medicate me. They would see me as an extreme grief. And extreme grief, as you maybe know, is in the DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual in the United States, and it's categorized as a category of mental illness. And so I didn't want to be categorized, and I didn't want to put in a box, and I didn't want this medicated away, because I wanted to continue to see Ben and experience him. And so eventually I ended up going to an evolutionary astrologer who told me that my soul had shifted from Uranus, which was shame, blame, and guilt to Neptune, the mystical path. And at the time, I'm thinking, what's a mystical path, and how do I get one? Where do you buy those?
Where can I get that degree? Where's that course?
Where's that course? I never heard of that one. And so, I got off the phone. I did what any logical left brain lawyer would do. I Googled it, and up popped the Four Winds Society and Alberto Viotto. And 3 weeks later, I find myself on a plane going to Joshua Tree, California. And for the south direction of the medicine wheel has four directions. And in the Andean mythology, we begin in the south because the cosmology is a little bit different in the south. It's based on the Southern Cross. Northern medicine wheels may begin in the east. So anyway, with this medicine wheel, we began in the south. And it had to do with the serpent shedding its skin, which the way we shed all our old stories. And I can tell you, I went there thinking, I'm not going to fit in here at all. This is all going to be all these spiritual woo-woo kind of people. And, well, if this doesn't work out, I can just go down the way to Palm Springs and get a massage and a facial and call it a day. And instead, I just loved it. I fell in just beautifully. I love one of the biggest lessons that I still carry with me to this day is we have something called spirit lottery. When we work with people in class, we don't get to choose. Because, you know, we choose people. We're so judgmental. This person won't like me. I might not like them. Oh, this person's like this. This person's like that. And when you're paired up by spirit lottery, you really begin to see that just like me, these people are hurting. And just like me, they're trying to find a way to heal. And just like me, they have all these masks up and they have all these things that are ways to keep themselves safe. And suddenly you see people in a very different light. And that was my introduction to shamanism. And then I kept going and going and going, and eventually I ended up teaching and writing a book about my journey. And shamanism actually led me to a point where I had to decide, which way am I going to go? Am I going to stay as a judge, or am I going to fly? Am I going to make a change? Because I couldn't do both things. They're just too incompatible. And so I went on a vision quest and really found out in that vision quest that what I wanted. I had another opportunity to maybe work with the Lakota tribe. I had other opportunities. But for me, Spirit's answer was clearly that my path was the shaman's path. And so I put my house on the market, and it was a down market, and nevertheless, it sold as is, full price in 3 days, and I had 5 weeks to get out of a house I'd been in for 30 years. But all the right people came along. Someone said, oh, there's this company, call them. They'll come in and they'll catalog it. They'll have this online sales. You'll never have to deal with it, and people will come and take these things. And so I sold, gave away all my art, my everything of a lifetime, and then went on a 2.5-year journey all over the world, really looking for ways to comprehend grief and loss and what was I supposed to do with the rest of my life and what could I do to honor my son. I didn't understand. All I understood was people wanting me to get over it. Get beyond it. It's you're taking too much time. I felt like I was out of time, out of sync, and people were looking at me like it's time to move on, it's time to do this, and I wasn't ready. And so I knew that what I needed to do for me was leave everything behind and go on a search. And fortunately, Alberto Viotto had this said he wanted to work with me and teach me. And so I got to have this fantastic mentor to help me through this entire process. And then as I trained with him, then I would go off on jaunts all over the world to talk with shamans in Africa and Sufi master in India and Muslim teachers and just teachers all over the world. John of God, I went to John of God and worked with the entities there. And I'm not promoting John of God. I know he certainly had his issues in the past. So I'm not saying that, you know, I'm a devotee of John of God, but the casa, the spiritual place, is very special, even without him being there now. And so it just became this journey where I was downloaded something that I could share with people, a way to find a way out of being stuck in their grief, stuck in despair and hopelessness. And so many people are stuck in despair and hopelessness. And so the journey that was downloaded to me is the one that our loved ones take, from transition to resurrection and then rebirth. And we know this based on Christian myths and Egyptian myths, and that's the journey that the deceased soul takes to the other side. And so do we. As above, so below, those hermetic principles come into play. And we're still, our loved ones are watching us. They're experiencing us. They see what we're doing. And the beauty of it is they want us to be unstuck. They don't want us to be sitting in despair and hopelessness. And sometimes we think our sadness and despair and our refusal to move on and keeping their rooms as a shrine is a way of showing them how much we love them, but they already know that. What they really want is for us to take that journey through grief and have a rebirth, creating a new life out of the ashes of the old one. And it's a process. It's a process, and everybody's on their own journey. So if anybody says it's time to move on, I don't know what time they're talking about, but it's not the time that I'm in. I like to operate in timelessness so that we can all take our own journey and take the steps as we're ready. And so my book has 16 practices people have heard of. They're associated with Buddhism and Christianity and many other disciplines, things like non-judgment, non-suffering, non-attachment, the beauty way. That's in the south direction. That's looking deeply at these things like non-judgment. Who are you judging? Who's judging you? And non-suffering. What kind of stories are you telling yourself over and over again that cause you great suffering? For me, I could tell myself, gave him to the wrong school, the wrong babysitter. I should have done this. I should have done that. I shouldn't have gone on vacation. I should have. So I could get myself so wrapped up in anxiety. And I was just causing myself a lot of suffering. And so asking ourselves, is this real? Do we really have control over everything? Could we have changed everything and saved our loved ones or saved our marriage or saved our business or saved our whatever it is, because we don't have control over everything. Control is an illusion of our egoic mind. So we look at these things and we just do it in a ceremonial way. So instead of just talking about it, I ask people to have a pie pan and a candle and a lighter and a little book and a pen and pencil, little book of paper, and so they can write down with radical honesty. And radical honesty is so important, because sometimes we don't let ourselves be seen, or we don't let ourselves see what's really in our heart and mind, and we sure don't want other people to read it. We don't want to be found. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So we keep a lot bottled in. But if you allow yourself to write things down with the knowledge that you're going to burn them in the fire, and for shamans, fire is the pathway to rapid transformation. So if you take all these things to the fire, to the candle, these pieces of paper, and burn them with the intention that they be released and that your heart be open for change, oh, it just makes such a difference, because we're engaging the brain at a different level. So in the physical realm, the day-to-day realm, we've got a reptilian brain or a mammalian brain. And so this is all emotions or physical things. And And it's very hard to move things at this level. And that's why so many people are told, and there are many, many books that say, okay, now you need to go on a date. You need to go to a movie. You need to go to a party. Milestones for the bereaved or for those who are suffering great loss. But what I think is we have to do a little preparatory work before we engage at the physical level. We have to get rid of the heaviness in our soul. We have to get rid of the places where we're need to be unstuck, the places that really got to us. And then look at other things like non-doing, non-engagement, certainty, fearlessness, so that we can become lighter. And then we awaken in the north with beginner's mind, living consequently, like it matters. Transparency, allowing yourself to really be seen, and integrity. Are you living the life that you want, or are you living somebody else's dream? Really look at these things honestly and deeply with radical honesty at a different level. And so the ceremonial level, we recognize it when we step into a cathedral or a temple and we see places where you can light a candle. And most of us instinctually kind of go up and light a candle. We know this. Fire has always been a part of mythology. It's part of our past. We, centuries ago, lived around fire. And so we take things to the fire in a ceremonial way and release it to God, to the universe, to spirit. Whatever your concept is of the great unknown, that's who releases it to. We release our prayers to that and in that way, in that ceremonial way, and open our hearts for new beginnings. And as we do this, we really get to this place where we are able to put things in perspective and to actually create a new life. Now we look at things like, then you begin to see synchronicities and opportunities instead of obstacles. You are able to disengage from your thoughts, your busy, busy mind. So no mind. And then owning your own projections. You know, everything that we see is, all reality is a projection of our perceptions. So when we are able to change our perceptions, even about death, even about loss, then we begin to be able to transform. And we call it indigenous alchemy. And I love these big terms. I like to define everything. So indigenous means native or innate, and alchemy, desire for transformation. And so once we get to this place of being reborn, we connect with our innate desire for transformation. Oh my gosh, you know, what I've come to learn is it takes people a lot of effort to stay stuck in despair and hopelessness. And I think we're just not wired that way. I think we're wired for transformation, for alchemy. And once we realize that and we can find the energy in grief or loss, then we can touch into this alchemy and we can touch into our innate desire to transform. And we can make this happen in a way that honors our loved ones. We're not forgetting them. We're not leaving them behind. We're honoring them in our new lives. So we know that other states of consciousness and things that happen to us in our lives, like marriage and parenthood, we know that has transformational energy. We just know that instinctually. We know it, but it's associated with happiness and joy and those sorts of things. But grief, we've never talked about in our society, most societies, about the transformational wisdom in grief and grieving and loss. There is an energy to that too, and an energy to be tapped into, and an energy that can help us to shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, good place. I'm just going to jump in because,
yeah,
you've been on this amazing transformational journey through experiencing the loss of your son and the intense, intense grief that you felt. I mean, I don't know if you before that were a person that ever felt that depth of emotion before, but it certainly was deep and intense, you know, and I know from reading your book, I mean, it was so intense you thought of your, you know, taking your own life because you couldn't live this intense grief. So when I'm just curious to know from your journeys with grief and what you have learned about grief, what do you think is the first, what is the process that a person needs to go through in order to give themselves permission to access grief? Perhaps it's overwhelming, an emotion they've never felt before to the depth.
And then
what do we do with it? You know, you wisely chose not to go to a therapist because always antidepressants are offered to people who are in grief, and it does shut you down. And grief has a purpose. That's why it's an emotion that we, you know, have access to. So can we talk about some of that? So people who are listening, who are experiencing some form of loss that activates and puts them in touch with the emotion of grief, they have some guidance from your experience of how to navigate this emotion that we avoid, we resist as much as possible. And, you know, I mean, grief is all about death, it's a death of something, and just because I'm in the midst here in Australia of these horrible floods, I just see this grief of people have lost literally everything. Some have lost their lives, and others have lost everything. How do you support people to navigate this time of loss?
Yeah, so it's really, you know, the times when it's fresh, in the first month, the first 6 months, those are times when we need people to just support us and to support ourselves and to realize that this is a transformational time that is difficult. And be easy on yourself, be kind to yourself, be loving to yourself, be loving and kind to everyone around you, because this takes a while to adjust to. It's an adjustment phase that you have to go through, because whether it's death or loss or just loss of a dream, where our entire field, our body, mind, our soul are in shock, and they're trying to figure out this new reality. So we have to give ourselves time and not tell people, well, it's time to move on, it's time to get over it, it's time to do this, it's time to do that. Just realize that you're on a journey, and this is just the first leg of the journey. And there's so much more of the journey to go, and some of it will be beautiful. And this part is really, really hard. And that's okay. And it's okay if you really feel horrible. And it's okay if you are falling apart. Sometimes we fall apart, and we fall apart to become strong, and allow yourself to cry. The tears are a way to move energy. So allow yourself to cry. Allow yourself to reestablish your body, mind, soul. Give yourself a little bit of time. And then after that, you can think about, okay, now I've made my first step in this journey. What am I going to do next? And realize it's a journey of transformation. And you're creating a new life out of the ashes of the old. And we're going to look at really, really deeply into where you're stuck and where you're hurt. Who disappointed you? Who wasn't there for you? Maybe it's the government. Maybe it's your neighbor. Maybe it's your mother. Maybe it's your sister. Maybe it's your brother. But to be able to really look at all this deeply is so important when you're ready at that point. And then, of course, there's people that are suffering not immediate grief, but old grief. I can't tell you how many people come to me to say, I never got over the loss of my mother when I was 11. Everybody kept secrets from me. I didn't know what was going on. I still don't know what's going on. And grief can sit in your body and create illness. So we want to work with old grief, compound grief. Some people have lost so many, many people along the way. So old grief, compound grief, fresh grief. Some people are caretaking people that are in hospice. And so they've got anticipatory grief. You know that the grief is coming. And so there's so many different kinds of grief, unresolved. So I always encourage people, especially when people come in and they're suffering and they're anxious and depressed, and what's going on when you were a child? What happened there? And a lot of people have unresolved grief kind of issues, loss kind of issues that they've been carrying and carrying, and releasing that is such an incredible burden. Sexual abuse. I mean, there's a lot of people that have been abused by religious people, and so they've carried this secret, the shame, blame, and guilt of things for a really long time. And to be able to work through that and really say out loud who it was that hurt you and write it down on a piece of paper and release the heaviness of it. It doesn't mean that it goes away. We can't. If I had a magic wand, I would make all the pain in the world go away, but I haven't gotten mine yet. But we release the heaviness around it.
And you, I mean, you became, you for you on your journey, you discovered or rediscovered these gifts that you had, that you had shut down to earlier in your life, that allowed you to have this clear audience, clear sentience. Can you speak a bit about what your personal experiences and what you've learned as far as the fact that when people die, they really don't disappear, you know, that,
right.
That we transform, we transcend. Can you talk about that? Because I think that also is important, wisdom that we have. So we understand more when there's a death of an animal, a death of a person. We need to have an understanding of this process of transition and these gifts that you developed as a result of this huge transformational process from the death of your son opened up these gifts. So
yes.
I'd love for you to share more about what you now know is true.
Yeah, so it started by me being able to see Ben after he passed and sense him, and then all of a sudden I was able to sense other beings and other people spirits that hadn't fully crossed over. So there's a place in between, and I think many religions talk about this. There's here on earth, there's a place in between, and then there's heaven or nirvana or wherever. So Sukhavati might be the place for the Buddhists. It's sort of that in-between realms, purgatory, many different names for it. It just has a quality of being a little bit heavy, not quite to heaven. And sometimes I help souls that are able to to be able to go to whatever their concept of heaven is. Sometimes they get stuck. Sometimes, especially suicides, you know, our cultures in the East, in the West here, have been so harsh on suicides. It's a sin, it's that, you're going to go to hell. And so a lot of times suicides are terrified. And so I work with my son, and he says, come on, man, there's a lot to learn on the other side. Come with me, I'll show you the ropes, that kind of thing. So we work together to transfer souls. And then there's people that are absolutely, completely on the other side. They've completely transitioned. My son is fully transitioned now, and yet he comes to visit. And so people are confused about that and say, well, how's that happen? How, if they're in heaven, don't they stay there? And I say, well, it's not prison, so they can come back and forth. And so many of us have had experience where we sense smell, have a knowing that their loved one has just kind of passed by or has been in the room or standing beside them or saying hello. Maybe a wind chime rings when there's the air is still and you're thinking about the person. So it's very confusing if we think, well, oh gosh, is something wrong? A lot of people say, I know I feel my mother around me. Is there something wrong? She shouldn't be here, right? She's supposed to be there. I say she just came to visit. She just came for a little visit. And so, yeah, just let that be. You know, it's A-okay. And then sometimes, you know, I can sense with people that the spirits are a lot heavier. They need a little help to transition. And so I can help them transition fully to cross over. So there's a lot that goes on in the in-between realms and the spiritual realms that more than we think. And the beauty of it is my son came to me as only a 27-year-old man can do, right? So I was saying, I think it was his birthday, oh, Ben, come visit, come visit. I haven't talked to you for a while. And he comes and he says, Mom, quit ringing my doorbell. I'm in the Jesus pod right now. And it's really cool. And so Jesus is real. Not all that stuff you read in the Bible, but all this really cool stuff. So I'm kind of busy right now. I thought, okay. I mean, isn't that what we want for our children? For them to be happy and having meaningful things going on in the other side. So it was great. And so I learned from him.
So you, yeah. But this is the point I want people to understand. It's like there is no such thing as death. So there is only transformation and transition into other states of consciousness.
Sure.
And that's what we're not taught in our culture, you know. And I know that, you know, my mother was terrified of death because she always believed it's lights out. And I think there is, you know, this whole pandemic has brought up the collective fear of death. And that's why we will do anything to make sure we, you know, we think, we've been told, will keep us alive and never have to deal with death. You know, our world would be so different if, as in many Buddhist cultures, and they understand and they're taught that there is no death and that, you know, in fact, being free when you are out of your body is a place where you have greater access to so many of the real essences of who we are. We are limited in a body. So that's the kind of knowledge people have. I mean, you have this gift of being able to communicate with your son because he is still here. He is still here. And
he's here, and
he's on his journey, and that has to be transformational for you from the state of grief you were in, where this experience of intense loss to this child that you were so close to, and then all the guilt that came up of you should have been there and could have and whatever, to this revelation that he still exists. You know, and you're blessed having these gifts, right? People need to know that, you know. And when my mother passed, I actually was out of the country, and I knew I couldn't get back in time. And I, you know, I had just spent time with her, and I knew that she probably was on limited time. And, you know, I dealt with that anticipatory grief. And when I got the message that if she wasn't eating and she wasn't drinking and she wasn't talking and it looked like she was ready to go, and I knew she needed to go because she was 95, her body was failing. And so I knew that she was in this process of dying. And one night I went to sleep and I had this experience, and there she was. And we were lying next to each other, and I was telling her that I love her, and she was looking at me lying down saying that she loves me. And then we went through this processional thing, and she said, I'm gonna go meet Dad, which she never believed. No matter how much I told her that would happen. And she was telling me great in this processional kind of experience. And I knew that that was a real experience with my mother. And even though she was in a state in hospice, not being able to speak and talk, and if I was there in person, I wouldn't have been able to have the kind of experience I had where I was thousands of miles away. But it was a beautiful experience knowing that she was in a place of, she was joyfully looking forward to reconnecting, reuniting with my father. So, you know, these are experiences that are so real. They're not just dreams. They're not fantasies. We move into other realms and other dimensions. And people can, I guess, ask for that, right? We can ask to have that connection.
Absolutely.
That
you know, when I was in my extreme state of grief, I kept screaming, bring him back. I want him back. Give him back to me. And I really think in a way I was gifted that. I was gifted this relationship with him on the other side. And it's and this brings enormous comfort to me and to people that I talk to know that, oh my gosh, there's a lot going on in the other side. This idea of their own eternal slumber. Ben's like, I'm not slumbering. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and they come visit, they check in with us, they watch us, they see us, and as they see us healing and as they see us recreating our lives and including them, and so created lives where they're celebrated throughout the year, where they're not just stuck away and you go visit the gravesite on Memorial Day or something, but they're part of the family. Is really beautiful. It's a beautiful way of honoring them and bringing joy to it instead of all of the sadness. I have one class that I did that was creating a despacho, which is a prayer bundle. And it was, I called it cooking, creating, and praying. And so we created this prayer bundle of everything they were using to bake with for the holidays. Put a little splash of this and a little that and a little bit of this and their favorite cookie and a little splash of wine. Then you have this beautiful bundle, and then you wrap it up and you can put it on the table, holiday table, and then afterwards you can burn it in the fireplace. And all these memories going on at the same time. Oh, remember this and remember that. Remember how he used to like this. Oh, let's put a cookie. He liked candy cane cookie. He liked peppermint. So it's a way of bringing them in a joyous, fun, celebratory way. It doesn't have to all be heavy and sad, especially when you know they're right there watching, and they're right there with you all the way. So so I want to turn the grieving process and the death process sort of on its head instead of saying this is the way it is and it's heavy and it's dark and it stays and it's despair and it's hopelessness. It's a journey. It's a journey, and it's a journey of transformation, and we're going to tap into that transformative energy. And I love the Lakota tradition because they say the first year after someone dies, they love to have the bereaved praying for the tribe because they believe the bereaved to be closer to God, closer to spirit. And what a great thing. Well, imagine if we thought that.
You know, it's true when you are feeling grief, you can only feel grief if your heart is open, right?
Yes.
You can only feel grief if your heart is open. And most of us, in our culture especially, we protect our hearts. We don't want to be vulnerable. Grief is an incredibly vulnerable time when our hearts are open and feeling that loss of a loved one, feeling the loss of love. Perceived loss of love, perceived loss of connection. And if we can be with that feeling of grief, we can also be with a greater capacity to feel the intensity of love.
Yes. Oh, yes. Beautifully said. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're vulnerable, but vulnerability becomes this doorway of tapping into a depth of experience and a depth of life that we don't normally let ourselves have access to.
Yeah, for sure.
Those are my thoughts anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And to think that, oh my gosh, it's what if it's transformational? What if I could honor my loved one? What if I could create a new life out of the ashes of this old one and do it in a beautiful way? And one of the things I ask people to do, I think when they're bereaved, and they've been bereaved for a long time, you forget about practicing beauty. So we call it the beauty way. But the beauty way is really remembering to check in and see a sunrise or a sunset or take a walk in the woods or go visit a museum or go visit a park or take a swim in the ocean or whatever it is that brings beauty to you. And so I like to have people write the word practice beauty, the words practice beauty, and put them on their refrigerator. And so do something every day, no matter how small it is. If it's getting your toenails polished or your fingernails clipped or your a plant purchased or whatever it is, do one thing each day that makes you remember beauty and brings beauty back into your life. Because it's so easy, we lose our connection to beauty with grief and loss. And it's so important. It changes everything when we reconnect with beauty.
You know, as you're saying that, it also is important to let people know that it's not business as usual. This is not a time for business as usual, right? It's not like you take a few days off and then go back to work and then bury yourself back into your work routine so you don't have to feel. This is time where you need to give yourself permission to be in this profound process of life. It doesn't fit into a schedule. In fact, a lot of people like to go back to work to do what they were doing before so they can kind of put on hold their feelings, but that can be useful for a time, but it can also be a deterrent from the completion of this process of healing, of moving this energy of grief into something else, as you said, into another transformative experience of who we are in life.
For sure. And sometimes
a whole journey. I mean, I just want to say I just want to add, just give me a second, I'll just complete this thought. What I just want to say is life is here to be a journey of transformation, of exploration, of reconnecting with the true essence, our soul essence. And there are times when events like grief shake us to the core, and in your case, shook you to the core, which was absolutely needed for you to wake up because you were and you had to wake up, and it took a dramatic event in your life to shake you awake.
And sometimes people get a diagnosis or a death, you know, something big happens and it shakes us up and shakes our world, and we get an awakening that we might not have gotten otherwise. And sometimes people try to, like you say, go back to work and shut it down. I'm not going to feel this. I know a man who didn't tell his people at work or anything for 16 years, and after 16 years, he completely fell apart about the death of his son. So we can deal with our grief early, or we can deal with it later. We can deal with it in the form of illnesses, or we can allow it to be right now, right here, and invite that elephant. You know, that elephant of grief sits in our heart, and it's not going to go anywhere. It's just sitting there until we start to work with it. It's like a big boulder. We can't move the boulder all at once. We have to dig and dig and dig a little bit, and finally we free that boulder. But it's a process.
Well, this has been such an amazing conversation. Your story is so profound, Karen, and the way you have shared it in your book is so profound. And then giving people a guide, you know, providing strategies to help to, as I like to say, navigate this process.
Yeah.
The process you're
in.
Well,
thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
You know, And I want people to know how to find you. So the best website is KarenJohnson.net, right, Karen?
Karen, yes, Johnson. You got
.net. Mm-hmm. Karen with a K, A-R-E-N, Johnson.net. And I know you also have your website, Karen Johnson Healing, your Facebook, rather, Karen Johnson Healing, and Instagram is,
yep,
Karen Johnson Healing. So just in the couple of minutes we have left, you are offering counseling for people. You have a practice. Tell us what you are doing.
I have a shamanic healing practice. So, you know, it's not talk therapy. It's not traditional counseling. It's a shamanic way of moving energies to help people to experience their grief and to work through the process of these. And in fact, I'll be having a class coming up soon that takes people through all four directions of the medicine wheel and working with grief for 4 weeks together in community to see that you're not alone. There's others that are suffering, and we suffer together. So that'll be coming out too. So if you sign into my website with your email at KarenJohnson.net or find me on Facebook at Karen Johnson Healing, you'll hear about my upcoming class, and maybe that'll be something that you'd be interested in, and going on this journey with me for a few weeks.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. It sounds like a profound time, and to be able to journey in community is, I think, one of the best ways to process the grief, to be supported,
yeah,
in community. It's very powerful to be part of a community, even a virtual community.
And we'll have a prayer bundle. We'll create a prayer bundle for our loved ones. And, you know, we'll pray together and we'll talk together and we'll cry together and we'll do it all together. And so that'll be coming up sometime toward the end of April, I think. A little bit before Mother's Day and Father's Day.
What a beautiful mission you have in life. What a beautiful purpose you've discovered, Karen. And
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You know, your intense healing of from grief has brought you this path, and now you're able to support people in dealing with their journeys of grief. And it's such a profound mission. So thank you for the great work you're doing.
Oh, thank you. I really am so blessed to be able to do it. And, you know, one thing I want to leave people with is we still feel the pain of their loss. Even going through all the processes doesn't mean we won't miss them, but we don't suffer. We get rid of the stories and the judgments and the attachments and all these things that are holding us and keeping us stuck. And so what we're left with is pain. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. So we don't want to suffer.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful thought to leave us with. And I do encourage people to pick up your book, which is Living Grieving, Using Energy Medicine to Alchemize Grief and Loss. Your beautiful spirit, Karen, you've been on an amazing healing path, and thank you so much for sharing your journey with us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining me for another conversation, profound conversation on what women must know. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.
Mm-hmm.